This morning I got some things on my heart to share that felt like the Lord led me here. I'm not sure how to put it all together, so I'm going to leave that up to the Lord. And it may be somewhat in parables, but I trust that we're all spiritually discerning here this morning and you can take what you need from it. Turn with me to Psalm 137. I was thinking about going through the book of Psalms for a message today and looking at some things, some commandments and things in there. Because there's Psalms is a place I need to spend more time in. But I came across a psalm and the Lord, I felt like the Lord just showed it to me. I just had picked up my Bible there. It was on my desk there at work and I was looking through it the other day and I came across this psalm and I haven't really left it since. Psalm 137. I'm going to read it and I'm not really going to make much comment on it. And I want to go look at some other things and then come back at the end of the message. Psalm 137 simply says, "By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, Sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? ? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, Raise it, raise it. And notice that's the R-A-S-E. That means to tear down. That doesn't, R-A-I-S-E is to raise something up. When you raise a building, you knock it down. It says, even to the foundation thereof. O daughter of Babylon, who art to be destroyed, happy shall he be that rewardeth thee as thou hast served us. Happy shall he be that taketh and dasheth thy little ones against the stones." I want you to imagine with me this morning, approximately 2,650 years ago, maybe, somewhere in there, 2,500 to 2,600 years ago. Beside a couple of rivers in Babylon. Probably the Tigris and the Euphrates. Very fertile area of the country. This is the most powerful nation in the earth at that time. They ruled basically the entire world. It was around the time of Nebuchadnezzar, of Daniel, of Jeremiah, I think Hosea, several of the minor prophets. A lot of the Bible was written around this time. And in Jerusalem, in the land of Israel, there had been the time of the kings when there was great glory, time of Solomon when there was all the riches of the world had flowed into Jerusalem. And then wicked king after wicked king, and the people kept turning away and turning to idols, and they kept being warned. And it went downhill and downhill and downhill. And by this time, all the riches were in Babylon, not in Jerusalem anymore. And they had come and they had taken some, I think the first wave was probably when Daniel was taken. Again, this is history. We don't all, you know, we only have what's written. And it's sometimes timelines and things are vague. But Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would probably been there. And obviously, they were probably, beings they were immediately in the king's house in Babylon, they were probably in the king's house in Jerusalem. And so he had come and captured the king and had set up a governor there in Jerusalem and had taken some of the best and the wisest young men back to Babylon, because he wanted all the talent there. That's where Daniel and his three friends were. And we realize what kind of place Babylon was. And Nebuchadnezzar, we remember those stories, right? Whatever the king said had to go. They built that huge idol. So somewhere in, during this time, and were the entire nation was commanded to bow down to it. Daniel didn't do what he was supposed to do, and he got thrown into a den of lions. Nebuchadnezzar the king, great and powerful. We were reading, I read the children a Bible story about him here recently, how he had been warned that if you don't humble yourself, you're going to become as a beast. And then later in there in Daniel, this is what the story was about, and how he was, it's like he wrote this himself, or he told this to his scribe, and he said, I was at ease in mine house. He was just chilling. He was just taking it easy. He was thinking about how good he had it. And there was this, it talks about these beautiful hanging gardens. I don't know what that would be, but imagine somehow they had these things suspended. I don't know what all kind of technology and things they had. Beautiful place. And here was Nebuchadnezzar the king, the greatest of all time to that point, the greatest in the world, most powerful man in the world, the richest man in the world. And he was looking out, and it says that he was saying, is this not great Babylon that I have built by my power? And about like that, the Lord spoke to him with a voice from heaven. I think it says it came. And it says, told him that he was going to live with the beasts of the earth. And his fingernails were going to be like birds' claws. His hair was going to look like feathers. He was going to be so matted. He was going to crawl on all fours. And that's exactly what happened. This great king was reduced to walking around in the woods and the fields. And it says that the dew, he had been prophesied that he would be wet with the dew of heaven. He would sleep outside just like an animal, like a deer or a coyote or a skunk. And then he didn't die. But he was, all of a sudden, his sanity returned to him. And then you don't read much more about Nebuchadnezzar because it wasn't about him anymore. He says, the last we read about him is, he says, and now I, Nebuchadnezzar, extol and honor the God of heaven. I can't quote it exactly. And that's what we read about Nebuchadnezzar. But in this time, in this apex. And so they had went and captured, partially destroyed Jerusalem, taken the king and set up a governor. And later, I think it was around this time, I think it was three times they came and took people from Jerusalem. We'll read about that here in a minute. You can go ahead and turn to Jeremiah 52. We'll read that here in a little bit. These people had seen their city destroyed, and then he had set up kind of a governor, and then he rebelled, and he said, I'm not going to listen to you over there anymore. And we're going to read there in Jeremiah how he came and he took that man captive and further destroyed the city. But as we read about how Jerusalem looked, think about these people. Somebody over here in Babylon, probably maybe on the Sabbath, maybe they finally got it. They were enslaved. They had nothing. They were the poor, the poorest of the poor. And they were out here. But they had their harps. But they couldn't bring themselves to sing because they remembered Zion. They remembered Jerusalem. And they sat down and they wept. And to make it worse, the people came and said, hey, why don't you sing us one of your songs? They're making fun of them. Why don't you sing one of your Hebrew songs? He said, how shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? Jeremiah 52 is kind of lengthy here, but it's interesting. If you should have probably read it out of the New King James, maybe it made a little more sense to the younger ones. It says, Zedekiah, Again, this was after there had been several times they had come and captured people and destroyed the city. And Jerusalem was in control of Babylon at this time already. Zedekiah was 1 and 20 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. And he did that which was evil in the eyes of the Lord, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. For through the anger of the Lord it came to pass in Jerusalem and Judah, till he had cast them out from his presence, that Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. It came to pass in the 9th year of his reign, in the 10th month, in the 10th day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, here it calls him Nebuchadrezzar, but I think it's Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came, he and all his army, against Jerusalem, and pitched against it, and built forts against it round about. So they had already done this. So the city was besieged unto the 11th year of King Zedekiah. In the 4th month, in the 9th day of the month, the famine was sore in the city, so that there was no bread for the people of the land. Then the city was broken up, and all the men of war fled, and went forth out of the city by night, by the way of the gate between the two walls, which was by the king's garden. Now the Chaldeans were by the city round about, and they went by the way of the plain. The army of the Chaldeans pursued after the king and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered from him. So the army had tried to sneak away because they knew they were beat with the king, but they caught up to him and they were scattered. It says in verse 9, then they took the king and carried him up unto the king of Babylon, to Riblah, in the land of Hamath, where he gave judgment upon him. And the king of Babylon slew the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. Imagine that. He slew also all the princes of Judah and Riblah. He was basically saying, showing him right in front of his eyes that your lineage, your dynasty will not continue, because I'm killing all your sons right in front of your face. Again, why did this have to happen? Is because Israel had sinned for generation after generation. Verse 12, now in the 5th month, in the 10th day of the month, which was the 19th year of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, which served the king of Babylon, into Jerusalem, and burned the house of the Lord, and the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, and all the houses of the great men burned he with fire. So, again, here's another fellow come back later to pillage some more. Verse 14, and all the army of the Chaldeans that were with the captain of the guard break down all the walls of Jerusalem round about. Then Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive certain of the poor of the people, and the residue of the people that remained in the city, and those that fell away, that fell to the king of Babylon, and the rest of the multitude. But Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, left certain of the poor of the land for vine dressers and for husbandmen. So there are just a few left, just a few of the poor, a few of the lowly, take care of the land. Verse 17, also the pillars of brass that were in the house of the Lord, and the bases and the brazen sea that was in the house of the Lord. The Chaldeans brake and carried all the brass of them to Babylon. The cauldrons also, and the shovels and the snuffers and the bowls and the spoons, all the vessels of brass wherewith they ministered, took they away. So again, Solomon and all his temple had made all these things, these beautiful things, and now they were all being carried away to Babylon. And the basins and the fire pans in verse 19, and the bowls and the cauldrons and the candlesticks and the spoons and the cups, that which was of gold in gold, and that which was of silver in silver, took the captain of the guard away. The two pillars, one sea, and 12 brazen bulls that were under the bases, which King Solomon had made in the house of the Lord. The brass of all these vessels was without weight. And concerning the pillars, the height of one pillar was 18 cubits, and a fillet of 12 cubits did compass it, and the thickness thereof was 4 fingers. It was hollow, and a chapiter of brass was upon it. And the height of one chapiter was 5 cubits, with network and pomegranates upon the chapiters round about, all of brass. The second pillar also, and the pomegranates were like unto these. And I didn't look up what all this was, but I think we can understand at least the fact, all these big words and words we don't use anymore, they were trying to describe something, but the reason they described it so closely is because this was extremely valuable, it was extremely precious, and it was all being carried away into Babylon.
And why? Again, because of their sin. And there were 96 pomegranates on the side in verse 23. All the pomegranates upon the network were 100 roundabout. And the captain of the guard took Sarai, the chief priest, and Zephaniah, the second priest, and the three keepers of the door. He took also out of the city an eunuch, which had the charge of the men of war, and 7 men of them that were near the king's person, which were found in the city, and the principal scribe of the host, who mustered the people of the land, and 60 men of the people of the land that were found in the midst of the city. So Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, took them and brought them to the king of Babylon, to Riblah. And the king of Babylon smote them and put them to death in Riblah in the land of Hamath. Thus Judah was carried away captive out of his own land. This is the people whom Nebuchadnezzar carried away captive in the 7th year, 3,000 Jews and 23. In the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar, he carried away captive from Jerusalem 832 persons. And in the 23rd year of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away captive of the Jews 745 persons. All the persons were 4,600. And it came to pass in the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, in the 12th month, in the 25th day of the month, that Evil-Merodach, king of Babylon, in the 1st year of his reign, lifted up the head of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and brought him forth out of prison, and spake kindly unto him, and set his throne above the throne of the kings that were with him in Babylon, and changed his prison garments. And he did continually eat bread before him all the days of his life. And for his diet, there was a continual diet given him of the king of Babylon every day, a portion until the day of his death, all the days of his life. So here again, we have Jeremiah in his last chapter, right before the book of Lamentations, by the way. And he is describing the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians. It was very bad. And quite a few years later, we have to actually turn forward in our Bible to the book of Nehemiah now. Let's go to Nehemiah chapter 5. Let's see here. I think that's what I want. Several different scriptures here in Nehemiah. Let's see which one I wanted first. No, let's go to the first chapter of Nehemiah, sorry. And may I just talk a little bit. Here was Nehemiah. This was many years later. It's earlier in the Bible, but it happened later. And here he was. It talks about how he was in the king's house. And he was the king's cupbearer, and he came. And the king asked him why he was so sad. Again, maybe he was one of those people. Maybe he was the one that wrote that Psalm 137. He was so grieved. But he was so burdened about Zion, so burdened about the kingdom of God that showed up in his work. The king was like, man, what's the matter? He said, well, king, how can I be happy when my homeland is in ruins? And of course, we know the story of the king. Man it up appointing him to go back and to rebuild. But in Nehemiah chapter 2, starting in verse 10. Well, that's not right either. I didn't write my scriptures down right. Yes, that's correct. Verse 10 of Nehemiah chapter 2. It says, when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant the Ammonite heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was come a man to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. And I arose in the night, I and some few men with me. Neither told I any man that what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode upon. And I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well, unto the dung port, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. Then I went on to the gate of the fountain, and to the king's pool. There was no place for the beast that was under me to pass. Then went I up in the night by the brook and viewed the wall and turned back and entered by the gate of the valley and so returned. And the rulers knew not whither I went or what I did. Neither had I as yet told it to the Jews, nor to the priests, nor to the nobles, nor to the rulers, nor to the rest that did the work. Then said I unto them, Ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, Let us rise up and build. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite, and Tobiah the servant of the Ammonite, and Geshem and the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us, and said, What is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king? Then answered I them and said unto them, The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we his servants will arise and build. But ye have no portion, no right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. So again, it just describes here he went out by night by himself. He wanted to go out there, and he describes the ruin that Zion was in. Again, what is the New Testament? What is Zion referred to in the New Testament? We know it's the church, right? And I was going to point out too in Nehemiah, the first chapter there, or is it the first part of the let's read the first couple of verses of Nehemiah, the first chapter. The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, And it came to pass in the month Cheslu, in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan the palace, that Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem. And they said unto me, The remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. So see, Nehemiah, they didn't have all the technology. He didn't even know about this. So somebody came from Jerusalem, and he asked him, and this is the report he got. In verse 4, And it came to pass when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. And I said, I beseech thee, O Lord, God of heaven, the great and terrible God, that keepeth covenant and mercy for them that love him and observe his commandments. Let thine ear now be attentive and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servant, which I pray before thee now, day and night, for the children of Israel, thy servant, and confess the sins of the children of Israel, which we have sinned against thee. Both I and my father's house have sinned. We have dealt very corruptly against thee, and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the judgments which thou commandest thy servant Moses. Remember, I beseech thee, the word that thou commandest thy servant Moses, saying, If ye transgress, I will scatter you abroad among the nations. He's lamenting, he's repenting. That was the key here. You say, well, what did Nehemiah himself do? He was pretty innocent, but he was repenting for his people. I don't know what all you're seeing in this. Says the people wept. Well, we'll leave that for now. But I feel like maybe we're kind of like the people left behind in Jerusalem. And we've gotten used to the walls being down. And our Nehemiah is working on it. Speaking too many parables here. But I saw our Nehemiah weep as well for the church here at Rose Hill. And may we be ready to help him build. I don't know who you identify with here, the people that left in Jerusalem or the people that were beside the river. Maybe, probably both. I think we can apply both to ourselves here. Is it okay to not want to sing? Were those people in the right to hang up their harps? Let's go back there now to Psalm 137. Again, here in the Old Testament time, different dispensation and so forth. The Zion was a physical place.
and it grieved their hearts. And now we can take this on several levels. We can also take this on a spiritual level as far as heaven, our homeland. Here we are. Like that song says, we're homesick for a place that we've never even been to. I think we can all kind of identify with that probably. Want to be there with Jesus. And how shall we sing the Lord's song here when we want to be at home? Adam Clark talks about Psalm 137 here. It says, they that carried us away captive required of us a song. This was as unreasonable as it was insulting. How could they who had reduced us to slavery and dragged us in chains from our own beautiful land and privileges expect us to sing a sacred ode to please them who were enemies both to us and to our God? And how could those who wasted us expect mirth from people in captivity, deprived of all their possessions and in the most abject state of poverty and oppression? Again, that was an unreasonable thing to ask of them. And it was done in kind of a mocking sense. Sing us one of the Lord's songs. How shall we sing the Lord's song? We exiles from our country. We stripped of all our property. We reduced to contempt by our strong enemy. We deprived of our religious privileges. We insulted by our oppressors. We in the land of heathens. We sing or be mirthful in these circumstances? No, God does not expect it. Man should not wish it. And it is base in our enemies to require it. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to grieve. How shall we sing? What do they weep over? I found this list. Somebody wrote about this. As we think about weeping over Zion, what should we weep for? Should we weep because things didn't turn out the way that I wanted them to? It's never okay to weep in self-pity. Here was a list of things they wept over. They wept over the death of so many loved ones. They wept over the loss of almost everything they owned. They wept over the destroyed city of Jerusalem and her great temple. And they wept over the agony of a forced march from Judea to Babylon. They wept over the cruelty of their captors. They wept over the loss of such a pleasant and blessed past. They wept over the forced captivity of their present. They wept over the bleak nature of their future. And they wept over their sin that invited such judgment from God. And I think because of that last one is why we see it turning around in Nehemiah's time. It wasn't that long later. It was a while, I think 70 years. But long enough that they could learn a lesson. Many of them did. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song. They that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. Then he says, how shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. Let's not forget the kingdom of God as we go through life. The hard things happen. Things go bad. Things are not the way we wish they would be. Can't forget God. Can't forget Zion. If I forget thee, he prays, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy, let's have our priorities right. Let's not give in to bitterness. Let's not give in to drowning ourselves in our work or things like that. It's okay to hurt. It's okay to remember. It's okay to not want to sing. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundations thereof. O daughter of Babylon, who art to be destroyed, happy shall he be that rewardeth thee as thou hast served us. Happy shall he be that taketh and dasheth thy little ones against the stones. What a terrible verse that sounds like, right? What is he saying? Happy is he who takes your little ones and dasheth thy little ones against the stones. But I think that their cry here was for justice, because this is what had happened to them.
And in the Old Testament times, physically, this was their enemy. I think it was okay for them to say that. Who's our enemy? Not each other. It's the devil. It's okay to want the devil to be destroyed, and one day he will. Death and hell will be cast into the lake of fire. It's okay for us to want the devil defeated. We better want him to be. He's our enemy. Let's remember who our enemy is. And again, we could take it to the other level of eternity in our souls and this Zion being heaven. That's also an application here. And the devil being destroyed, the last enemy being defeated, and going back and rebuilding Jerusalem to its true state forever. Much better than what they even had here in the Old Testament. The new Jerusalem, as it says in Revelation. And we have this picture. I think it's something because in the Babylon is used many times in Revelation. I say many times, 4 or 5 times. It is likened unto the world and Satan and his things. And then the new Jerusalem is heaven. Babylon is fallen, it says in Revelation. All those figurative language. I don't know how to, didn't really study it very deep. I looked up those references just for curiosity's sake. It's always talking, it's referring to the powers of darkness, sin, Babylon. And it will fall one day, just like this Babylon did. Thought of a couple of songs. One I thought of, the other one I found. I didn't know it existed. Long ago by a river, Zion's captive band hung their harps on a willow in a foreign land. They could not sing of Zion, but they wept that day as they thought of a home far away. Is your harp upon the willow? Have you lost your joyful song? Is your heart now filled with sorrow as through life you go along? Put your trust alone in Jesus. Victory he'll surely bring. Cease today your sad repining and take your harp from the willow and sing. Though your burdens are heavy and the way seems long, you should ne'er let the tempter take away your song. Every load will be lighter if you'll praise the King. Take your harp from the willow and sing. We are going to heaven, wondrous city fair. Golden harps will be ringing when we all get there. Endless joy is awaiting in that land of spring. Take your harp from the willow and sing. So this song, again, the chorus goes again, is your harp upon the willow? Have you lost your joyful song? Is your heart now filled with sorrow as through life you go along? Put your trust alone in Jesus. Victory he'll surely bring. Cease today your sad repining and take your harp from the willow and sing. I think it's okay. This song is calling us to pick up our harps and sing. And I think it's okay to be sad. I think it's okay to have a spell to not be able to sing. Again, not if we're feeling sorry for ourselves, but it's okay to hurt. Let's look for a time we can sing again. Hopefully it's right now. We can be joyful even in tough things, whatever we're going through. But there will come a time when we're called to sing. Pick up those harps. Again, in the spiritual sense, around the throne. The other song, I didn't even really know this song, but I found it. So the children of Israel sat down by the river. They wept in remembrance of Zion, their home. They were led into bondage. They lost their song. They hung their harps on the willow. Don't hang your harp on the willow. Don't give up the race. There's a crown to be won. Just keep your eyes on Jesus. Someday you'll be glad when he says, well done. It says, Satan has tested me so many times. He says, give up. There's no use to go on. But I'll sing for Jesus. I've made up my mind. I'll not hang my harp on the willow. Don't hang your harp on the willow. Don't give up the race. There's a crown to be won. Just keep your eyes on Jesus. Someday you'll be glad when he says,
Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Let's kneel for prayer.